Nomoto presents American Presidents. President Donald J. Trump. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Ava voice. Running time, approximately 45 minutes. On the evening of November 8, 2016, Americans and the world looked on in astonishment as the election results defied almost all expectations. Donald J. Trump, a billionaire real estate mogul and reality television star with no prior political office, was declared the winner of the U.S. presidential race. It was one of the most extraordinary political upsets in American history. To Trump's fervent supporters, many of whom felt ignored and left behind by the political establishment, it was a jubilant victory, a chance to make America great again and shake up a status quo they despised. To his opponents, it was a moment of shock and alarm, as a man known for his brash, norm-breaking persona now prepared to occupy the Oval Office. Trump's rise to the presidency marked a sharp break from political tradition and signaled a deeply polarized era ahead, with clashes over fundamental values that would test America's institutions. Donald John Trump was born on June 14, 1946, in Queens, New York City, into a life of privilege and blunt ambition. He was the fourth of five children of Fred Trump and Mary McLeod Trump. Fred was a successful real estate developer who built middle-class housing in Brooklyn and Queens. Mary was a Scottish immigrant who had met Fred in New York. Young Donald grew up in a stately home in the Jamaica Estates neighborhood. As a boy, he was strong-willed and confident, to the point of being considered a troublemaker at times. At 13, after Donald got into some misbehavior, reportedly frequent bullying and possibly involvement in vandalizing a neighbor's property, his father decided he would benefit from discipline and sent him to the New York Military Academy. There, Donald Trump thrived under the regimented lifestyle. He became a student leader, played multiple sports, and learned the value of projecting strength and winning, traits that would become central to his identity. After high school, Trump attended Fordham University for 2 years and then transferred to the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, known for its business program. He graduated in 1968 with a degree in economics. During the Vietnam War draft, Trump received educational deferments and a medical deferment for bone spurs, allowing him to avoid military service, a fact that would later draw some scrutiny in his political life. Straight out of college, Trump joined his father's real estate business. He was eager to expand the company beyond its Queens and Brooklyn roots into the glittering realm of Manhattan. In 1971, he moved to Manhattan and started making deals to develop properties in the crumbling city, which at the time was facing high crime and financial woes, but had great potential for those willing to take risks. Trump's early Manhattan projects combined bold vision with a knack for public relations. In 1976, he struck a deal to renovate the old Commodore Hotel next to Grand Central Terminal, leveraging city tax breaks to transform it into the Grand Hyatt, which opened in 1980 and was a hit. But the project that truly cemented his fame was Trump Tower. Completed in 1983 on Fifth Avenue, Trump Tower was a 58-story glass skyscraper with a waterfall in the lobby and luxurious apartments and retail space. It became synonymous with 1980s extravagance. By then, Trump was marrying his business success to celebrity. He married Ivana Zelnikova, a Czech model and athlete, in 1977. She became an important business partner as well, involved in some of his projects. They had three children together: Donald Jr., born 1977, Ivanka, 1981, and Eric, 1984. And for a time, Donald and Ivana were fixtures of New York's high society, gracing gossip columns and magazine covers. Throughout the 1980s, Trump's empire and brand grew. He opened casinos in Atlantic City, including the massive Trump Taj Mahal. He bought the Plaza Hotel in New York, an airline, Trump Shuttle, a yacht, and other high-profile assets. He slapped his name on everything he touched, cultivating an image as the ultimate dealmaker. In 1987, he published The Art of the Deal, a part memoir, part business advice book that became a bestseller and further elevated his persona as a savvy, no-nonsense negotiator who always came out on top. Behind the scenes, of course, Trump's business ventures were a mix of successes and failures. His Atlantic City casinos, laden with debt, struggled in the early 1990s amid a recession. By 1991 to 92, several of his companies had filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, and Trump himself came precariously close to personal financial ruin. Banks forced him to cede control of some projects and sell off the yacht and airline. He reportedly was $900 million in personal debt at one low point, and lenders put him on a tight leash. Yet Trump clawed his way back. Through aggressive negotiations, he restructured his debts and benefited from an improving economy. By the mid-90s, he had stabilized his businesses and was expanding again, though often with more borrowed money. His personal life also made headlines. His marriage to Ivana fell apart, splashed across tabloid front pages, especially after Trump's affair with actress Marla Maples became public. He divorced Ivana in 1992 with a much-discussed settlement and married Maples in 1993. They had one daughter, Tiffany, that same year. By 1997, however, Trump and Marla divorced as well, and Trump's flamboyant bachelor lifestyle returned to the tabloids' delight. As the 21st century began, Donald Trump's public image was well established. He was a larger-than-life tycoon, synonymous with wealth, glamour, and also a kind of brash crassness that fascinated people. He made frequent cameos in movies and TV shows, always playing himself, the emblem of ostentatious riches. In 2004, his fame skyrocketed to a new level with the debut of The Apprentice, a reality TV show on NBC. As the host and central figure, Trump put contestants through business-themed challenges, eliminating them one by one with the catchphrase, "You're fired." The show was a massive hit, rejuvenating Trump's celebrity for a new generation and presenting him as the decisive boss who could turn aspiring entrepreneurs into stars or crush their dreams. He became one of America's most recognizable TV personalities, reinforcing his brand as a successful businessman and dealmaker, even though behind the scenes some of his ventures, like his casinos, continued to struggle. He'd go through additional bankruptcies for his casino holding company in 2004 and 2009. Trump's flirtations with politics date back decades. In interviews as far back as the late 1980s, he mused about possibly running for president, usually framing it as something he'd only do if things got really bad. In 1999 to 2000, he briefly explored a run for president on the Reform Party ticket, but withdrew. Over the years, he shifted political affiliations, Democrat in the early 2000s, independent, then Republican, often aligning with the party of whoever had influence in New York City or could benefit his business interests. He donated to candidates of both parties. For a long time, many assumed his political flirtations were more about ego and publicity than genuine ambition. However, by the early 2010s, Trump began to morph into a political figure in a more sustained way. A key moment was 2011. President Obama was in office, and a fringe, but growing conspiracy theory held that Obama had not been born in the United States, the birther a lie. Trump, leveraging his media platform, became one of the loudest voices fueling this false claim. He gave numerous interviews casting doubt on Obama's citizenship, demanding to see his birth certificate. The issue endeared Trump to a segment of Americans who were deeply opposed to Obama, some motivated by partisanship, others by less savory factors like racism. Obama eventually released his long-form birth certificate in 2011, effectively debunking the conspiracy, and at the White House Correspondents' Dinner that year, a famously cool Obama publicly ridiculed Trump in the audience, joking about the conspiracy and Trump's reality show. Some speculate that Trump's humiliation at that event further motivated him to seek the presidency, though Trump himself says he'd been considering it seriously for a long time. In June 2015, Donald Trump at last launched a full-fledged campaign for president. He announced his candidacy at Trump Tower, descending an escalator with his wife Melania, a Slovenian model he had married in 2005, with whom he has a son, Baron, born 2006. In his announcement speech, Trump struck a nativist, populist tone that would become his trademark. He warned that Mexico was sending rapists and criminals over the border, vowed to build a great, great wall and have Mexico pay for it, and declared that the American dream was dead, but he would revive it. The speech was widely condemned in the media for its derogatory generalizations about immigrants, and many pundits did not take Trump's run seriously, seeing it as a branding exercise or a long shot with a comedic tinge. Yet Trump's message resonated powerfully with a segment of Republican voters. As the primary debates began, his unapologetically harsh rhetoric on illegal immigration, his anti-establishment posture, drain the swamp would become a chant, and his willingness to insult and belittle his opponents gave him unprecedented media coverage and a devoted following. He mocked war hero John McCain by saying, "I like people who weren't captured," derided opponent Jeb Bush as low energy, and hurled coarse insults that would have sunk other campaigns. But rather than implode, Trump's poll numbers rose. He had tapped into a vein of discontent, especially among white working-class voters who felt left behind by globalization, angry about manufacturing jobs moving overseas, uneasy about cultural changes and immigration, and distrustful of career politicians. Trump's flair for showmanship and his background as a reality TV star allowed him to dominate news cycles like no politician ever had, effectively drowning out his rivals' messages. Networks often aired his rallies live, giving him hours of free exposure. In the Republican primaries, Trump vanquished a field of 16 opponents, many of them established senators and governors. By May 2016, he was the presumptive GOP nominee. Traditional Republican leaders were aghast. Many had opposed him, warning he was unfit, but eventually the party largely fell in line behind his candidacy, albeit uneasily for some. Trump's general election opponent was Hillary Clinton, a fixture of the Democratic establishment and someone who in many ways was the perfect foil for Trump's anti-elite message. On the campaign trail, Trump's rallies continued to be raucous affairs. Supporters donned red, "Make America Great Again" caps and roared as he promised to bring back coal jobs, punish companies that moved factories abroad, slap tariffs on countries like China whom he accused of cheating America, rip up international agreements he said were bad deals, and end political correctness. His stump speeches painted a dark picture of an America in decline, rife with crime, radical Islamic terrorism, and corrupt leaders, and himself as the lone outsider who could fix it. Critics noted his speeches were often filled with factual inaccuracies or outright falsehoods, but his supporters admired what they saw as his authenticity and fearlessness in telling it like it is. The 2016 campaign was one of the nastiest in modern history. Trump relished attacking Clinton, branding her "Crooked Hillary," encouraging chants of "Lock her up," over her use of a private email server as Secretary of State, a controversy that dogged her campaign. His own controversies were legion, from his refusal to release tax returns, breaking decades of precedent, to inflammatory remarks about Muslims. He proposed a temporary ban on all Muslims entering the U.S. and other groups, to clashes with a Gold Star family who criticized him, to revelations about his treatment of women. In October 2016, a month before Election Day, the Access Hollywood tape surfaced in which Trump, in 2005, was caught on a hot mic boasting in vulgar terms about groping women, "grab them by the pussy." The public backlash was severe. Numerous Republican lawmakers rescinded their endorsements. Many thought this would fatally end his chances. But Trump, in a moment of political survivalism, issued a rare apology, calling it locker room talk, and pivoted to attacking Bill Clinton's past infidelities, attempting to turn the tables on Hillary by association. Incredibly, Trump's campaign weathered the storm. A loyal base of voters either forgave him or dismissed the tape as irrelevant compared to their larger anger at the political system. The final weeks of the campaign saw an extraordinary twist when the FBI director, James Comey, announced he was reopening an investigation into Clinton's emails due to a discovery on a separate case, a move that dominated headlines and hurt Clinton's momentum. Though Comey cleared her again just days before the election, the damage was likely done. On November 8, 2016, Trump defied the polls and pundits. He lost the popular vote by about 3 million, but eked out narrow victories in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, Rust Belt states that had typically voted Democratic in recent decades. Those wins, along with holding key swing states like Florida and North Carolina, gave him a decisive Electoral College victory. It was a stunning upset that revealed deep regional and demographic divides. Clinton did well in diverse urban areas. Trump cleaned up in rural and small-town America and among voters without college degrees. Many Americans reacted with jubilation at what they saw as a political revolution, many others with despair and even fear, particularly in immigrant communities, given Trump's hardline stances. Donald Trump was sworn in as the 45th president on January 20, 2017. In his inaugural address, more dour and populist than typical, he spoke of American carnage blighting the nation, abandoned factories, poverty in inner cities, and crime. He promised to stop carnage and return power to the forgotten people, asserting an America First vision where U.S. interests would always come before global considerations. The speech alarmed critics, but thrilled his base. It was clear from day one that Trump's presidency would break the mold. He flouted many norms, refusing to divest from his business empire, instead handing day-to-day control to his sons, but still profiting from it, hiring a cabinet heavy on wealthy outsiders and generals, and showing little interest in the usual briefings and policy prep that consumed his predecessors. Instead, he continued holding campaign-style rallies and, most notably, took to Twitter as his megaphone, firing off tweets that could roil markets, insult foreign leaders, or attack the media, often in the early morning hours. One of Trump's first actions as president set the tone for the turbulence to come. In his first week, he signed an executive order temporarily banning entry into the U.S. for citizens of 7 Muslim-majority countries and suspending the refugee program. The travel ban, as it became known, took effect immediately and without warning, causing chaos at airports as travelers who were mid-flight found themselves detained or sent back upon arrival. Protests erupted at airports nationwide, and legal challenges quickly halted parts of the ban. The rollout was widely criticized as inept and discriminatory. After court defeats, the administration eventually issued revised versions, and by 2018, a scaled-back ban, excluding some countries, adding others, was upheld by the Supreme Court. To Trump supporters, this fulfillment of a campaign promise showed he was taking bold action on national security. To detractors, it exemplified religious animus and impulsive governance. Domestically, Trump set about dismantling many regulations, especially in environmental and business arenas. He was the anti-Obama in policy, withdrawing Obama-era guidelines and rules on everything from climate change to transgender student protections. Where Obama expanded environmental protections, Trump appointed industry-friendly heads like Scott Pruitt at the EPA to roll them back, including loosening rules on power plant emissions and water pollution. He argued this was freeing businesses from burdensome red tape to create jobs. Indeed, under Trump, fossil fuel production surged to record levels, delighting oil and coal interests. But environmentalists warned that this would aggravate climate change and cause long-term harm. Trump's economic stewardship was marked by a major legislative achievement in December 2017, a sweeping tax reform. With unified Republican control of Congress, at first, he passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the biggest overhaul of the tax code in decades. It slashed the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21% and gave temporary tax cuts to individuals, with the largest benefits going to the wealthiest. The plan's proponents claimed it would unleash economic growth and investment. Critics said it mostly helped the rich and corporations, blowing up the deficit in the process. The economy did grow around 3% for a time in 2018, unemployment hit 50-year lows, and companies executed stock buybacks and some business expansions. But wage growth remained modest for much of his term, and the benefits of the growth were unevenly distributed, continuing a trend of inequality. Immigration was perhaps the signature issue of Trump's rise, and as president, he pursued it zealously. He put in place a zero-tolerance policy at the southern border in 2018 that led to thousands of migrant children, including toddlers, being separated from their parents, who were prosecuted for illegal entry. Images and stories of crying children in detention facilities provoked a fierce backlash domestically and internationally. Even some Republicans pleaded with Trump to reverse course. After weeks of insisting that only Congress could fix it, Trump eventually signed an order to halt routine family separations, though by then the damage, psychological for the families and reputational for the administration, was done. Reunification efforts lagged, with hundreds of children still separated from parents long after. Trump also slashed refugee admissions to record lows and tried to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, program protecting Dreamers, though the Supreme Court in 2020 blocked his rescission of DACA on procedural grounds. Building the border wall became an obsession and a symbol of his presidency. By 2019, Trump had reallocated several billion dollars from the Pentagon's budget to build sections of a wall after Congress refused to fund the full amount he wanted, leading to the longest government shutdown in U.S. history at the end of 2018 when Trump demanded wall money. By the end of his term, about 450 miles of barriers were built on the southern border, though much of it replaced existing fencing. Trump touted it as progress on securing the border, while critics noted Mexico never paid for it, despite his promise, and that he had to circumvent Congress to do it. Trump's approach to the presidency was confrontational at every turn. He picked fights freely, with the press labeling mainstream media fake news and the enemy of the people, with professional athletes who kneeled during the national anthem, whom he said should be fired, with members of his own administration who didn't show absolute loyalty. Turnover in the White House was at levels never seen before. By the end of 4 years, he had cycled through four chiefs of staff, multiple national security advisors, and numerous cabinet secretaries either fired via tweet or resigned under pressure. Governing often took on the feel of a reality show. Some of Trump's aides were seasoned figures trying to impose order. Generals Jim Mattis at Defense and John Kelly as Chief of Staff, for example, but they often left disillusioned or were fired after clashing with Trump's more impulsive, gut-driven decision-making. Despite the chaos, Trump was able to maintain the fervent support of his political base, in large part by delivering on certain key promises, appointing conservative judges, including three Supreme Court justices, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, cementing a rightward shift in the court for potentially decades, cutting taxes, and being unabashedly anti-globalist. On the global stage, Trump's presidency upended many facets of U.S. foreign policy. He had campaigned on the idea that U.S. allies were taking advantage of American generosity, and he carried that chip on his shoulder into office. At NATO meetings, he lectured allies about not spending enough on defense, rattling Europe's confidence in America's commitment to collective defense. He withdrew the U.S. from multiple international agreements, the Paris Climate Agreement, arguing it was unfair to the U.S., the Iran nuclear deal, calling it disastrous, and instead pursuing a maximum pressure campaign of sanctions on Iran, and various arms control treaties. He also began a trade war with China, slapping tariffs on roughly $360 billion of Chinese imports by 2019 to pressure Beijing on trade imbalances and intellectual property theft. China retaliated with tariffs on U.S. goods. The tit-for-tat hurt American farmers and manufacturers, although Trump provided tens of billions in farm aid to blunt the pain. Eventually, A phase one trade deal was signed in January 2020, where China agreed to buy more U.S. products, but most tariffs remained. While some appreciated Trump's tougher stance on China's trade practices, consumers and businesses at home bore the cost of tariffs, and economists noted the trade war ended up slightly hurting U.S. growth. Trump had an affinity for strongman leaders. He cultivated a personal rapport with North Korea's Kim Jong-un, exchanging letters and holding two high-profile summits, Singapore in 2018 and Hanoi in 2019, to negotiate the rogue state's denuclearization. Though unprecedented as spectacle, a U.S. president meeting a North Korean dictator, the summits produced no concrete deal. North Korea maintained its nuclear arsenal. Still, Trump famously declared he fell in love with the North Korean leader's letters and boasted that his diplomacy averted war. He also repeatedly praised Russia's Vladimir Putin, even as U.S. intelligence agencies concluded Russia had interfered in the 2016 election to help Trump. Trump often seemed to take Putin's word over his own intel communities, such as at a July 2018 Helsinki press conference where Trump downplayed Russian interference. This deference to Putin, plus Trump's affinity for other autocrats like Brazil's Bolsonaro or Turkey's Erdogan, alarmed traditional U.S. allies and many at home. One of the biggest sagas of Trump's presidency was the investigation into whether his campaign had coordinated with Russia in the 2016 election and whether he obstructed justice regarding that inquiry. In May 2017, after Trump fired FBI Director James Comey, later admitting to NBC it was due to this Russia thing, the Justice Department appointed former FBI Director Robert Mueller as special counsel. Mueller's investigation loomed over the first 2 years of Trump's presidency. Trump railed against it incessantly as a witch hunt and attacked Mueller's team and cooperating witnesses on Twitter and at rallies. The probe resulted in dozens of indictments, including of Trump's campaign chairman Paul Manafort, his deputy Rick Gates, his personal lawyer Michael Cohen, and others, mostly on financial crimes or lying to investigators. Several Russians were indicted for election interference. When Mueller's report finally came out in April 2019, it found insufficient evidence to establish a criminal conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia, but it detailed extensive Russian meddling and multiple contacts. On obstruction of justice, Mueller outlined several episodes where Trump tried to impede the investigation, like ordering White House counsel Don McGahn to fire Mueller, which McGahn refused. Mueller did not exonerate Trump, stating if he could be cleared, he would say so, but he also didn't recommend prosecution, essentially punting to Congress. Attorney General William Barr's early summary framed it as a vindication, and Trump claimed total exoneration. The country, already partisan, saw what it wanted in the Mueller report. To Trump's base, it was proof the witch hunt failed. To opponents, it showed numerous instances of wrongdoing and abuse of power. Just as the Mueller saga was winding down, another controversy engulfed Trump. In mid-2019, a whistleblower complaint emerged that President Trump had pressured Ukraine's new president, Volodymyr Zelensky, during a July 25th phone call. Specifically, Trump urged Zelensky to announce investigations into Joe Biden and his son's work in Ukraine, as well as a discredited theory that Ukraine, not Russia, interfered in 2016. At the time, Trump was withholding nearly $400 million in congressionally approved military aid to Ukraine, which was desperate for assistance against Russian aggression. The implication was a quid pro quo. Ukraine would only get the aid and a coveted White House meeting if it helped Trump politically by smearing a likely 2020 rival. When this came to light, after Trump's own rough transcript of the call was released, it set off a firestorm. The Democrat-led House launched an impeachment inquiry in September 2019. Over weeks of hearings, diplomats and officials testified that indeed there was a shadow effort led by Trump's personal lawyer Rudy Giuliani to pressure Ukraine for investigations, that everyone understood the aid was conditioned on it, and that this undermined U.S. policy and national security. Trump flatly denied wrongdoing, famously saying the call was perfect and instructed most top aides not to cooperate. Many subpoenas were ignored. Nevertheless, the evidence, including text messages and credible witnesses, painted a damning picture of a president using foreign policy to benefit himself politically. On December 18, 2019, Donald Trump was impeached by the House of Representatives on two articles, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. He became only the third U.S. president to be impeached, after Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. Not a single Republican voted yes, illustrating the deeply partisan divide. In the Senate trial in early 2020, Republicans, led by Mitch McConnell, opted for a swift process with no new witnesses. The trial's outcome was a foregone conclusion. On February 5, 2020, the Senate voted almost entirely along party lines to acquit Trump. All Democrats and one Republican, Mitt Romney, voted to convict on abuse of power. All Republicans except Romney voted to acquit. Trump claimed vindication and quickly moved to purge officials who had testified against him, such as Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who was reassigned from the National Security Council, and Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who was recalled. Trump's acquittal and the strengthening economy seemed to bode well for his re-election chances. By early 2020, unemployment was at 3.5%, a 50-year low. Trump's approval rating, while historically low for a president at that stage, hovering around mid-40s, was inching up a bit. Then an unforeseen crisis struck, the COVID-19 pandemic. In January 2020, a novel coronavirus emerged in China and began spreading rapidly. By late January, the U.S. had its first confirmed cases. Initially, Trump publicly downplayed the threat, saying it was totally under control and that it would miraculously disappear. Behind closed doors, as revealed later through interviews, he acknowledged to journalist Bob Woodward that the virus was deadly and airborne. Nevertheless, his administration's early response was uneven. To his credit, Trump restricted travel from China at the end of January, a move experts said bought some time, though tens of thousands of people, mostly U.S. citizens, still returned from China afterwards. But testing in the U.S. rolled out slowly due to bureaucratic and technical failures, allowing silent spread. By March 2020, COVID-19 was exploding in parts of the U.S., especially the New York City area. Hospitals were overwhelmed, stockpiles of protective gear were insufficient, and the economy went into freefall as states imposed lockdowns to curb the virus. Trump's leadership during this epical crisis was erratic. At first, he denied the severity. Then, when shown dire projections of potential deaths, he pivoted to somber acknowledgments and daily press briefings. Those briefings became must-watch TV for a time, but also platforms for Trump to spar with reporters, praise his own actions, and sometimes spread confusion by contradicting health experts or touting unproven treatments, like hydroxychloroquine. In one notorious briefing in April, he mused about whether injecting disinfectant or using UV light inside the body could treat COVID, prompting shock and warnings from medical professionals that no one should do that. The gaffe dominated headlines and reportedly led his aides to scale back his daily appearances. The federal response, coordinated by Vice President Mike Pence and advised by doctors like Anthony Fauci and Deborah Birx, did take some significant steps, funding vaccine development, Operation Warp Speed, invoking the Defense Production Act to boost manufacturing of ventilators, and distributing some critical supplies. But there were also conflicts with states over who was responsible for testing and supplies. Trump often shifted blame to governors, saying the federal government was just a backup. His messaging was inconsistent. After urging caution through April, by late April, he was cheering on anti-lockdown protesters with tweets like, "Liberate Michigan." Many public health experts felt his impatience to reopen undermined the lockdown efforts. Indeed, the U.S. had a patchwork of responses, and by summer 2020, after initial progress, cases surged again as states reopened. Parallel to the pandemic, another wave of turmoil hit America in the summer of 2020, a national reckoning on racial injustice. In late May, a video went viral showing George Floyd, an unarmed black man in Minneapolis, being murdered by a white police officer who knelt on his neck for over 9 minutes. The horrific footage ignited protests in over 140 cities, the largest mass demonstrations in the U.S. since the 1960s. Calls for police reform and racial justice rang out. While many protests were peaceful, some nights saw rioting or clashes with police. Trump's response was heavily focused on law and order. He threatened to deploy active duty military to quell unrest, something not done during domestic disturbances in decades. And in D.C., he had federal officers clear peaceful protesters from Lafayette Square using tear gas and force, so he could walk to a church for a photo op holding a Bible. This strongman approach pleased his base and some worried suburbanites, but also deepened critics' perception of him as divisive and authoritarian. Amid the tensions, Trump largely avoided addressing the core issues of racism and policing, instead doubling down on support for law enforcement and accusing protesters of being anarchists or terrorists. As the 2020 election approached, the country was battered. More than 230,000 Americans had died of COVID-19 by early November. Millions were unemployed from the pandemic's economic shock, and the streets had seen unrest. Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee, campaigned as a steady, empathetic alternative who would listen to science and unify the country. Trump, trailing in polls, hammered Biden as too old, a puppet of the radical left, and claimed without evidence that mail-in voting, expanded because of the pandemic, would lead to massive fraud. He refused to say he'd accept the election results if he lost, insisting the only way he could lose was if the election was rigged. On Election Day, November 3, 2020, a record number of Americans voted, many by mail or early voting. Initial results that night showed Trump leading in several key swing states as in-person votes, which skewed Republican, were counted first. But as mail ballots, which leaned Democratic, were tallied over the ensuing days, Biden pulled ahead in a blue shift, winning states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and narrowly Georgia and Arizona. 4 days after the election, media networks projected Biden as the winner. Trump, however, refused to concede. Rather than following tradition and facilitating a peaceful transfer, he launched a barrage of baseless allegations that the election was stolen, claims of dead people voting, machines flipping votes, secret dumps of ballots, all assertions that were repeatedly debunked by election officials and courts. Trump's legal team, led vocally by Rudy Giuliani, filed dozens of lawsuits across multiple states. Almost all were dismissed for lack of evidence or standing. Recounts in places like Georgia affirmed Biden's wins. Trump leaned on state legislatures and officials to ignore the popular vote or appoint alternate electors, a brazen assault on democratic norms that largely went nowhere, as most officials refused to subvert the vote. Throughout November and December 2020, Trump's rhetoric grew only more heated. He invited supporters to Washington on January 6, 2021, the day Congress would formally count the electoral votes, promising it would be wild. Indeed, on January 6, Trump addressed a massive crowd near the White House, riling them up with false claims of a stolen election, urging them to fight like hell and march to the Capitol. The shocking result was that a large mob of his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol, overrunning police, smashing windows, and temporarily halting the electoral count as lawmakers hid in fear. It was the first time since 1814 that the Capitol had been overrun. The scenes of rioters carrying Trump flags in the halls of Congress were an indelible, dark stain on his presidency. Eventually, the National Guard cleared the building, and Congress reconvened to certify Biden's win in the early hours of January 7th. A few Republican lawmakers who had planned to object to the count changed their minds after the insurrection, though others still pressed their objections even post-violence. In the immediate aftermath, the House of Representatives moved to impeach President Trump for an unprecedented second time, charging him with incitement of insurrection. 10 House Republicans joined Democrats in voting to impeach on January 13, 2021, making it the most bipartisan impeachment in U.S. history. The Senate trial took place after Trump had left office. Biden was inaugurated January 20, 2021. And while a 57-43 majority voted to convict, it was short of the two-thirds required. Trump was thus acquitted again, but with the largest bipartisan vote against a president in impeachment trial ever, 7 Republicans joined all Democrats. However, that dramatic epilogue lies just beyond the scope given. Stopping at the end of 2020 means ending with a nation in turmoil. By December 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic was in its most lethal phase yet, averaging thousands of deaths per day. Amid this, the first vaccines, thanks in part to Operation Warp Speed, were authorized and began to be distributed, a scientific triumph that should have been a bright spot. But the president was largely absent from leading this historic vaccination campaign. Consumed by election grievances, Trump barely mentioned the pandemic's toll or the vaccine rollout in his final weeks. Public perception of Donald Trump by the end of 2020 was intensely polarized. His approval ratings stayed in the low 40s%, remarkably consistent throughout his tenure, reflecting how entrenched opinions had become. To his loyal supporters, many of whom formed a quasi-cult of personality around him, he could do little wrong. They saw a man who spoke their language, took on the establishment, brought a booming pre-pandemic economy, kept America out of new wars, and stood up to China and international freeloaders. They appreciated that he moved the U.S. Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, something past presidents had promised but never did, that he brokered peace deals between Israel and some Arab states, the Abraham Accords, and that he unapologetically defended symbols of American heritage amid cultural disputes, like opposing the removal of Confederate statues. They often dismissed criticism of his conduct as fake news or partisan attacks. On the other hand, Trump's detractors were aghast at his norm-shattering behavior and its implications. They viewed him as a chronic liar. Fact-checkers documented tens of thousands of false or misleading statements, a bully who belittled allies and cozied up to dictators, and a leader whose mishandling of the pandemic cost many lives. They saw his attacks on the press and democratic institutions as corrosive to democracy. Many were simply exhausted by the constant chaos, the feeling that the presidency had turned into a reality TV spectacle with real-world consequences. Internationally, Trump's presidency strained America's alliances and altered its image. Some foreign publics admired his brash style or saw him as a welcome change from typical politicians, but many traditional allies were alarmed by his unpredictability and apparent ambivalence about the post-World War II international order that the U.S. had built. Trump's legacy included a reshaped judiciary with a strong conservative bent, a Republican Party refashioned in his populist, nationalist image, and a country even more divided along partisan and cultural lines than when he took office. As 2020 came to a close, Donald Trump was in the waning days of his administration but refused to publicly accept the incoming Biden presidency. The nation prepared for transition under the most strange circumstances in modern memory. The Trump era had delivered on disruption. It had energized millions of people and frightened millions of others. Whether one views those 4 years as a needed course correction or a dangerous detour, there is no doubt that Donald Trump left an indelible mark on American politics and society. He cast aside many conventions of the presidency, for better or worse, and forced a confrontation over what America stands for. As historians in the future analyze this period, they will ponder the long-term impact of Trump's unique brand of leadership. For now, his presidency stands as a testament to a turbulent time when the United States, like the rest of the world, grappled with profound changes and challenges under a leader whose name itself became a synonym for controversy and division.